Welcome back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. I also just wanted to quickly reiterate that my girlfriend Sarah's car has blown up, if you're just tuning in, and we desperately need to get that puppy fixed. So if you have a if you're in the Auckland area and you are a car mechanic or have a spare vehicle lying around, or have some spare cash or something of that nature, or alternatively, she doesn't want to get a handout, really. She's a professional gardener, really onto it. So if you have some gardening jobs that you need done, please contact me through the website if you're living in Auckland, and we'll get her sent out to you to actually work for said money. Me, my work is doing this radio show. You know, this is my responsibility. It's my duty, and I can't go back to work for scumbags anyway. So I don't really have much of a choice. And thank you very much for all your support thus far. And I really hate to ask the audience for help, but I only do it when I really, really desperately need it. If Sarah doesn't have a car, she can't do work. If she can't do work, she can't have no money. If she don't have no money, she can't have a car. So it's a vicious cycle. My very special guest is John Carman. And look, can you actually list for me these careers that you've had? You know, you see that you work for the Secret Service.
I just sent you an email with the list just so you could look at it.
Oh, right.
I can verbally just tell you offhand that I have worked for Naval Intelligence prior to going into the Secret Service. Then went into the San Diego Police Department, which is a local state and local police department here in Southern California. Then I went into the U.S. Mint Police, which is Treasury, to get reinstated so I could go into U.S. Customs. And in between that time, I was a private investigator. So I spent about 25-plus years in law enforcement.
That's an extraordinary career, man. I presume never got discharged for any unscrupulous reasons, I'm sure.
No, but I got forced out for being a whistleblower when I was with U.S. Customs, and basically that's what happens to whistleblowers. So unless you've got a lot of money or you have another income, you have to be prepared to suffer the worst consequences. Eventually, I went ahead and resigned.
Okay, whoever that is, tell them to shush.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I'm on the radio. Internationally known.
Yeah.
Trying to do the Vincent Eastwood here. Come on.
He's trying to do the Vincent Eastwood. Come on. What you playing at, yo? Okay.
That's exactly what they are.
Oh, no. Okay, let me
shut the window because this guy's got a camera out there.
Yeah, good on you.
Hold on.
Yeah. Well, see, this is what I find interesting about whistleblowing is that you experience the worst possible consequences if you blow the whistle, because of the fact that if you're on the inside, it's kind of like if you penetrate your enemy's defenses, you can do a hell of a lot of damage from the inside. This is the very principle behind the whole Trojan horse phenomenon of getting behind the walls of Troy in order to do a sneak attack from the inside. And I believe that the process of being a whistleblower is actually very much similar to that. You are a much larger threat if you're already inside, past their defenses, than you are somebody who's attacking from the outside, trying to get in, yeah?
Exactly.
Could you explain what exactly were you blowing the whistle on, and be specific about it?
Sure, I'll give you some names. I'll give you an example. One day in the early 80s, mid to early 90s, I discovered a document that was one of the offices that I was in charge of, and I was looking through the drawer and I was doing some cleaning, and I found the document. So what's this? It was an overflight list. And it's posted on my website. It's called the John Heinrich Overflight List, which is an illegal document that a district director north of the San Diego District up in Long Beach, which is up and around the L.A. area, was giving the authorization for 167 foreign nationals to come into the United States illegally without checking their passports. That would be the equivalent of just saying, well, you know what, Bin Laden's got some friends and he needs to get them into the country, and here's $250,000 and let us in.
Well, they did do the reverse of that after 9/11. They said, hey, Bin Laden's got some family members and we need to get them out of the country without checking their passports.
That's a fact. That's a fact. There were people meeting with some Saudis at the time 9/11 was going down. And that's actually like a public record now, because it's common knowledge that there were some people that they wanted to allow them to get out of the country before things got really heated up. But once I reported this information, they admitted it was illegal, but they never recontacted me and said, okay, we need you to do this, or we need you to do that, or do a report or something else, and they just didn't follow up. And being an experienced investigator, I know that they have to do certain procedures. That's what kind of gets whistleblowers in trouble, is when you know the job, you report the activity, and when they don't do it properly, you have to go above their heads and keep reporting it to other agencies that are in control. So you might go to Office of Special Counsel, or you might go to the OIG, which is the Office of the Inspector General, all the way up even to the FBI, which is an outside law enforcement agency, but they also investigate internal corruption as well.
Not very thoroughly, I might add.
Pretty much. I get reports daily on their activity nationwide. Their activity is so widely spread out. The U.S. attorneys, there are some good U.S. attorneys, but there's a lot of corruption even in the government, in the U.S. Attorney's Office. And, of course, then what's going on with Barry Sotero, Eric Holder, the Fast and Furious case. I'm sure you may have heard about that.
I've heard references to it, but I don't know any specific details or what it's actually really about. Could you explain it to me?
Sure. Basically, Fast and Furious had to deal with the fact that they were having guns sold to cartel members, Mexican law enforcement people under the supervision or observation of U.S. government agents from ATF and various other law enforcement federal agents. And what they were trying to do is claim that they were just going to see who they went to, but basically once they were bought in the United States and then taken south into the Mexican border area, they were gone. They lost control of it. And a lot of those guns ended up in crimes later that one was attributed to the murder of a Border Patrol agent named Brian Terry. And this all fell under Eric Holder's jurisdiction, Barry Sotero, the President of the United States' jurisdiction, Napolitano, and a bunch of other people that were in charge of these agencies. But they're trying to claim that they were doing something that it would be like catching a smuggler and saying, okay, we want you to work for us, give us all your dope, and we're going to let you drive out of here and drop off your car, and we're going to work together. And the guy turns around, flips him off, and then drives back into Mexico. You know, where's the control? So they do a lot of stuff haphazardly, and then they come back and lie about it. It's just like what happened at Benghazi. That's a sore subject. You know, you got Department of State head Hillary Clinton, who has no business whatsoever being a public official in charge of people's lives in any capacity. And yet those people were under attack by terrorists, and they knew within the hour what was going on. They even had drones. They had satellite coverage. They knew exactly what was happening the whole time it was going on. I may have gone off subject a little bit, but it still ties in with the incompetency of the current government at hand and what they're doing that's illegal.
Can I provide something supplementary here? There's a New Zealand documentary called Someone Else's Country, made by a guy named, I think, Alistair Blair or whatever. And what was very interesting is that he runs through these different prime ministers of New Zealand, you know, our equivalent of the president, of course, and shows how they say one thing in public and what they're going to do, and then it also shows how the bureaucrats essentially inform said prime minister once he gets the phone call every single time that we're in a massive economic crisis. Like, you get this call from Treasury, we're in a massive economic crisis, and it's all the other governments and the other prime minister's fault, and so now you're not going to be allowed to carry out any of your promises, and instead you're going to have to do this, this, and this, otherwise the country's going to be destroyed and collapse. And so regardless of who that prime minister is, they renege on every single one of their promises and blame the previous government. And it happens again after they get unelected and the next person comes in, right? I think that that's how it works. I think that the people who are allegedly in control are simply faces for the bureaucracy. And the great thing about just having faces that are representing you is that you can change them anytime you want. John, are you there?
Hello.
Yeah, I can hear you, man.
Okay. Yeah, let me interject that what you're saying is true. It's just like Jimmy Carter, when he came into office, he promised to release Operation Blue Book, which is about the UFOs. And when he tried to get help from former President Bush Sr., Senior Bush basically told him, well, hey, you've got access to the Library of Congress. Go look over there. Which basically he was thumbing him off, telling him, hey, you know, I'm not going to help you. Go look somewhere else. After the president got briefed properly by national security agencies, CIA, and so on and so forth, he was practically in tears because he couldn't release the information. What does that tell you? You know,
it tells you that the president runs nothing and never has.
Well, exactly. That's part of it. But the thing about the UFOs, if there were none, he would have just said, yeah, here's a report. They don't exist. Of course they exist. That's the other issue. But that's not my area of expertise. But I'll tell you this. I was in the White House. I was in the Secret Service. And I know what goes on and how they do things. So if somebody wants to say something about ETs, I say, yeah, what about them? You know, let's talk. If you want to talk about chemtrails, nah, I don't want to talk about chemtrails. You know, there's a big difference. but they try to sidetrack you and get you to talk on subjects that they go off on tangents, and then it's mind control, MK Ultra. A friend of mine, Ted Gunderson, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him.
I am.
Ted Gunderson and I were very good friends. Ted Gunderson was a former FBI agent and a special agent in charge out of the L.A. office. He was there back in the 60s. In fact, he was very familiar with JFK, RFK, Marilyn Monroe, and so on and so forth. He just passed away about a year ago. But I still stay in touch with his family. And we would talk on occasion about all kinds of practices. So he had asked me about all kinds of things. You know, if I saw certain things at the White House or if I saw certain activities, I say, hey, everybody that comes into the White House grounds is logged in. Doesn't matter who it is, what's it for, or anything. And they get in. They're escorted, every one of them. And yet there's rumors going around. So, you know, you have to filter through all the BS and, you know, get to the truth and see what people are throwing out there. Because you've got misinformation agents. I don't know how you stand with Alex Jones.
Well, you know, I'm of two minds about him. On the one hand, I know a hell of a lot of really nasty things that he's done to people, even from this network. And on the other hand, he was the one who kind of woke me up and got me to go out and do this. And he'd done that to so many other people off their ass and wakes so many people up on a daily basis that, you know, you wonder whether or not you should criticize him at all and just let him do what he's doing because he's doing it well.
Huh. I wonder if I'm coming across choppy to you because I'm getting some interference on your side.
A tiny bit, but it's nothing. It's nothing too horrible.
Those damn people out of Langley, you know, they want to sit there and interrupt the transmission. You know.
Well, let's hope we're that important for them to do.
Yeah, I've listened to him and some of his BS before. And I go through a lot of these conspiracy theory people. There was one guy, I can't think of his name, who was the author of Behold the Horse? William,
that would be Bill Cooper. Something.
That's right, Bill Cooper. And he passed away. He was actually shot. And he was kind of a nutcase. I read his book. It was kind of hard to get a copy of his book. And he was trying to allege that one of the drivers or the agents in the Kennedy assassination actually shot JFK. And I said, no, that's ridiculous. They're just trying to take some shadows and make it look like something else. And there's no way that he could have turned around. You try it yourself. Sit in a chair and try and turn all the way around with a gun and try. It won't work. You can't do it. You know, it's not going to happen. There are too many witnesses. But he had some other interesting information, though, which kind of scared people. But as far as Alex Jones goes, I was actually scheduled to do a radio show with the guy, and they cut me.
John, we're having real problems with your audio here. Hold on a second. I think we've got your phone number here. So what I would like to do is actually get you on the phone, keep your Skype on, and keep your camera going, so that we can have that recorded, and we can just talk to you through the phone line. We should have the we've
got really coming in chat.
We've got a break coming up very soon anyway, so what we'll do is we'll call you back on the phone after mm-hmm. the break, and we'll get everything sorted out there, because if it's choppy, it's choppy, and it does not make for good radio, especially for the listening audience, and I apologize, everybody, for the technical issues. When you're running a radio show, there are a number of things that can go wrong. I think probably the worst show that we've ever done was one with Tila Tequila. I think there's about maybe a dozen things that can go wrong, you know, give or take. You know, like somebody's audio, somebody's video, somebody's phone, somebody's cell phone, somebody the network or power supply, and all of these other annoying little things can possibly go wrong, and you don't know which one of them it is at any given time. So it's a real complex thing. And fortunately, most people, though, they tend to think, oh, it's the intelligence agencies messing with me, as opposed to I'm just incompetent. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. John Carman from customscorruption.com is my guest. We kind of went off on a bit of a tangent there, John, didn't we, when we started talking about whistleblowing and customs to a whole bunch of other things. John, are you there? Can't hear you, John.
Okay, I'm on the cell phone, so if you transmit from the other one, the speaker on the other one won't be.
Yeah, I can hear you. You're coming across loud and clear through the cell phone.
Okay. I've got the Skype muted, so I'm not sure what's happening there.
Oh, no, that's good. That's good. Keep the Skype muted.
Okay.
Okay, so I wanted you to expand more on your whistleblowing experience, and specifically, you were talking about how I think wasn't this Iran-Contra that you were kind of blowing the whistle on?
No, I'm familiar with that, but basically, it all ties in because the U.S. Customs Service intercepts narcotics coming across the border, basically. You know, by plane, car, rail car, passengers, even military ships and military flights. Iran-Contra was about them trading narcotics for military-type hardware. I believe Oliver North was involved in that quite heavily. That was under the Reagan administration back in the 80s, if you've heard that before.
I have, yeah.
Okay. A lot of the stuff I was involved in was probably during the same time frame in the early 80s, from about 83 to 1998, which is 16 years. And we had an incident where a DEA agent named Kiki Camarena was working undercover down in Guadalajara. And apparently some of the Mexican officials caught him and tortured him and eventually killed him. And it was during the same time frame that Reagan was president and Oliver North was also involved in making lots of undercover type contacts with these people. So he was deeply involved in a lot of illegal activity on behalf of the government. It's almost like the United States has to add another product on the NASDAQ, because a lot of these countries openly get involved in narcotics, like Colombia. So you might see cocaine, marijuana, and so on and so forth right up there with corn, rice, beans.
And oil. You know.
Sorry?
And oil, no doubt.
Oh, exactly, yeah. Venezuela is also big in oil, too. And I guess Hugo Chavez just passed away. There's a lot of stuff going on with that. So there's a lot of turmoil going on in a lot of these other countries regarding those natural resources. But that's another thing that we may have been trading off for as well. But you would think that if we went to the Middle East to help out a country like Iraq at one point, why aren't we setting up McDonald's and fast food places and gas stations left and right over there and getting the gas down to 50 cents a gallon?
Mm.
And then the government lies about that stuff, because in the United States we had a pipeline that went all the way up to Alaska in the 70s. And then after that, they capped it off, and you didn't hear anything. You've got oil reserves in Texas. You've got oil reserves in Louisiana, Oklahoma, and several other states, and they're all capped off. And yet, we're paying $4.35 to almost $5 a gallon of premium gas.
Mm.
I'm not sure what your gas prices are in New Zealand.
Oh, they're like $2 a liter, which works out to about maybe $6, $7 a gallon?
Oh, my God. So, you know, you're talking like over $50 a gas tank full.
Oh, it's nearly 100 New Zealand dollars, yeah.
Exactly. So there's another control issue. As long as they've got the people scurrying around trying to feed themselves, transportation so they can take themselves to work, they don't have time to fight the crooked government. And right now they've got gun grabbers out there claiming, oh, we need to get rid of all these automatic weapons. There are no automatic weapons. They're semi-automatic. And because they look like assault weapons, it scares them. That's all the crazy democratic communist left-wingers talking, you know. This country was founded on the fact that we had our people fight against King George back in the 1700s, and we had to use our muskets. And then the English would prefer that you all stand up in a row and wear bright colored clothing, and then they could just shoot at you, and then they get to take turns shooting back and forth. That's ridiculous. You know, that's why the Indians got a piece of us back in those days, you know. But anyway, that's going back into history a little bit.
Well, again,
you wanted to go back to the whistleblowing stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, I disclosed a lot of information about supervisors that were illegally involved in not following procedures. I see some heroin that was being smuggled in by a border crosser, a Mexican national who had a certain type of shoes on that had a thick sole. So I was concentrating on looking at these people, and I would check them briefly, give them a quick pat down, or just touch them and talk to them and see if they were nervous. And this guy was reacting, so I pulled him inside, and he didn't want to get checked. So he resisted. I had to cuff him up and found heroin inside of his socks and heroin inside of his shoes. He probably had over $100,000 worth of heroin on him. And the supervisor contacted the narcotics police from Mexico across the border, and they showed up. And when I seize narcotics, it belongs to the government of the United States. It goes to the U.S. Attorney's Office, so they use it as evidence. And then if there's a court case that goes before a judge or a jury or not, it gets disposed of and destroyed. That's it. Instead, I had a Mexican-American supervisor contact these people from down south, and they showed up, and they wanted to take the heroin, and I refused. That's a perfect example right there of somebody who is meddling and interfering. Interfering with a federal officer in the performance of his duties is a federal offense. So the supervisor was actually involving himself in a felony, and yet they promoted this guy later. I got a commendation out of it, but I did not get a promotion. So eventually word gets around. So it's just those are just some examples of some of the things I reported, but when you've got military flights that are supposed to show up and they don't show up, that's a serious thing, especially when they're coming from a source country, you know, like Panama.
There was an interesting couple of stories I wanted to mention here to flesh this out. And apparently a major in the U.S. Air Force was on a Mexico City airbase or something like that, and a U.S. Fire Service, I believe, C-130 Hercules came in, operated by CIA people. And he went on and checked the plane, and he found $1 billion worth of cocaine on board in these big, giant bags on pallets marked evidence. and then he was found dead, shot in the face with a shotgun twice while he was asleep. And
I know who you're talking about. Hold on. It was Colonel Sabo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if he was a Marine or Air Force colonel, he was stationed up in Riverside, I think, just north of me by a couple of 100 miles, maybe. And he was getting ready to disclose information about illegal activity where the U.S. military aircraft were being used to smuggle. And what happened was somebody showed up at his house, and they claim it was a suicide, but what they did was they shoved a shotgun down his throat and pulled the trigger. That's kind of hard to do when you're doing suicide.
Mm.
You'd have to be on like heroin and Demerol and LSD at the same time.
It's freaking weird. And the other element I wanted to discuss as well is we talked about the stock market trading and how, you know, heroin and cocaine and marijuana should be up there along with all of the rest of the commodities that get traded. And I think it was Michael Rupert from thewilderness.com used to be
LAPD.
LAPD narcotics officer recruited by the Department of Justice and the CIA bunch of other things. And he disclosed that if you have a company that is listed on the New York Stock Exchange, you don't have to file transaction receipts if you put in $10,000 or more like the rest of us do. And so the massive drug dealers have been using companies like allegedly Coca-Cola, Pepsi, other companies listed on the New York Stock Exchange to launder their drug money.
Uh-huh. I'm showing my bottle here. Yeah, I know Mike Rupert very well. I've gone with him to various seminars or speaking engagements and so forth. And his situation is a very interesting situation. We had a mutual friend that died named Gary Webb, who wrote a book. And he used to work for the San Jose Mercury News. And he disclosed a lot of information related to Mike Rupert's case. The biggest idea was that the CIA was trying to put a lot of narcotics into the streets, and they used a guy named Ricky Ross, not the same person who's a rapper, but a different person, who was legitimately working as an agent of the CIA. And eventually they went ahead and went against him. And this is not the first time that they've used registered informants or people working for the agencies and they'll turn right around and put them in jail. And they're perfectly innocent people that thought they were doing something for the government. In Mike's case, I know he's a pretty sincere guy, and he got a raw deal. He had a lot of death threats, like I've had death threats. And I guess eventually he had to skip the area and go somewhere else for a while. But with this Dorner case recently, I've made contact with him. I haven't heard back from him. But his story is very interesting, and there's a lot of stuff, a lot of facts to what he's talking about. And Sally Castillo is another mutual friend who's former DEA, who also supports the same story I told you about with the hangar down in El Salvador. It was filled with cocaine. And if that stuff that was on a plane was evidence, it would have been marked with a DEA sticker. So I don't know if this stuff was properly marked or not. And it would have had a serial number to the case, the agent's name, and they would have had escorts by the actual agents.
Well, it seems to me that the government are the ones who run the drugs, right?
Yes.
And the U.S. economy is predicated upon a substantial amount of debt. And in order to prop up the U.S. economy, you need substantial amounts of liquid cash to be flowing through it so that the whole thing doesn't basically collapse in on itself in a Building 7-type fashion. And so they can't stop dealing drugs at this point. The billions, possibly, I don't know, hundreds of billions or whatever, ridiculous amounts of money anyway.
Right.
If they were to pull that out, they would be pulling out the rug from the entire U.S. economy overnight, right? So if the drugs were legalized, they wouldn't be able to do it anymore because legal substances prices come down significantly because it introduces competition into the market without the need for criminality. They don't want that. They want to keep selling expensive illegal drugs.
Well, you're right. You're correct on all those counts. And as an example, in the state of California, as in other states, they have legalized marijuana at the state level. So that means you can get a medical marijuana card from a doctor if you've got arthritis or whatever your malady is. And you can have a special card, and you can go purchase a certain amount of medical-grade medicine or marijuana with THC in it and use it. But if you go across the border, you're subject to search, and if you get caught by Customs or Immigration or what they call CBP or ICE right now, then you can get in trouble because the feds are not recognizing the state jurisdictions over the medical marijuana. And yet they're going out actually busting people who have these hospices or these places where they sell the marijuana. And the contradiction is the fact that the doctors that wrote the prescriptions have something called a DEA number on their license. That means the DEA authorized these doctors to issue prescription medication. See, there's a big conflict. So the government doesn't know what it's doing. And that means every case where somebody was arrested that has a medical prescription from a doctor who has a DEA number should be thrown out.
Well, I would think that that should be the case if the government followed its own laws, which they don't.
No, of course not. It's not who you know, it's who you...
Yeah.
It rhymes with no.
Where are the government, boy? We make the laws, we don't follow them. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with John Carman, my very special guest. His website is customscorruption.com. Back in a minute.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, John Carman from customscorruption.com, has been kind enough to join us for this extended interview. You know, John, we've only got one more segment left, and the rule of activism, as far as I see it, is you'll probably be very good at what you do, but you'll experience some form of disillusionment with what you do and start to just go, you know, I really don't want to do this anymore. And then you start fighting against the people that have disillusioned you. Or you're in a family situation whereby you're raised to think like an activist because your parents will be really active, or they'll be conspiracy theorists themselves, or whatever. And your situation is more the former. So I wondered what lessons have you really learned from all of this? I mean, could you give advice to people who are currently in law enforcement or customs or things of that nature, or what to watch out for? What would you be advising these people?
Well, that's a real heavy question, because as you stated before, I grew up in a military family. We moved around every 3 years, conservative type situation. And I learned at a very early age I could not depend on anybody. And I learned martial arts when I was in Japan. I was very good at sports. I was, you know, number one in everything, and heavyweight, this, that, and the other. And I learned real soon that I was building my resume for my law enforcement career. And if you learned that you can work with partners, but you have to depend on yourself, because you're the one that's going to get through a situation, because a lot of times you can't depend on these other people because they're not qualified, they're not highly trained, they're not as involved as you might be. You know, if I had 50 people that were just like me, there would be no problem at the border where I was at. But unfortunately, they're not. So you've got people who have jobs, they have other loyalties, they want a paycheck. That means they're going to kiss somebody's behind and be very political. Even the females, I hate to pick on a couple of females, but the only reason they got promoted was because they kept their mouths open. And there were some people who got promoted because they kept their mouths shut. A lot of those people don't even know what the badge means. And in my background and training and expertise, you are what you represent. So if you represent integrity and you're not corrupted, then that's the goal behind the badge. But the other people, they don't care. You know, if you had somebody's badge from a guy who was corrupt, it would mean nothing. It's a piece of trash. There are other people who I've actually looked up to. Like I mentioned, Frank Serpico, he was back in the 70s. There was a couple other guys that they actually named Batman and Robin out of New York. Hans Greenberg, and I think it was Hans and Greenberg, the last names. And those guys fought against the corrupt system, and eventually they got forced out as well within 5 to 7 years. And yet they went to work every day making serious criminal arrests of serious bad guys, and yet these other guys weren't doing their jobs. So you got to wonder who's getting the payoffs. And that's exactly what the problem is in the United States. It's going on in all the other countries. And now we're facing this problem with the terrorists. Well, what are they doing about that? You know, they're being too diplomatic or grammatically correct about our, you know, Muslim brothers. Well, they're not brothers. If you read the Quran, and I have, they want to kill you if you're a non-believer, plain and simple. And yet they mix the Torah, which is the Jewish book, with the Bible and try to claim ownership. It doesn't make sense. It's like some crazy person on LSD put that stuff together. Not to mention the 72 virgins, you know. Because I was doing an investigation on a lady here in San Diego where this Egyptian woman was having contact with Yasser Arafat just before he died. And Yasser Arafat was a well-known terrorist. And yet the Clinton regime welcomed him like he was just another guy. And so do you realize that Arafat used to pay families like upwards of $25,000 a year if they would donate one of their children to a suicide bomb? That's the kind of guy they were fighting. So I support the Israeli Defense Forces, and I support Israel in everything that they do up to a point, and the Mossad and Netanyahu and all these guys. When the Hamas launches rockets from behind school buildings and hospitals, it seems like some of the news agencies, and I've even heard, I think it was NPR, if that's one that you're familiar with, NPR, they didn't even know to ask the right questions. And, you know, the question should have been, gee, Hamas, why are you guys launching rockets into a country and they're just blatantly killing people? And yet they don't answer those questions.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's why Israelis don't trust chickpeas, because they could potentially become Hamas.
Exactly. Exactly. By the way, I wanted to interject that I'm in a couple of books. I think Defrauding America is also Drugging America by Rodney Stitch is a really good book. I highly recommend that any law enforcement official who is thinking about blowing the whistle or going undercover or exposing the corruption seriously look at that, and or contact me off the air, maybe through you, if you want to do it that way, because I could coach somebody who's got problems with their agency, because if they don't do it right, they'll either lose their job, which is probably safe, versus getting killed, which is the other alternative. And I've had death threats, I've had attempts on my life, that sort of thing, but I was highly trained, so I guess they didn't want to risk their lives to mess with me. But I'm still in a situation now, I'm still guarded. I think there was a gentleman over in Australia, I believe it was Dan Russell. I'm not sure if Dan Russell rings a bell. Drug Wars. Yeah, that was another book that I was quoted in. And I'm still working on my own book. And I've been quoted in Bordergate, which is by Darlene Fitzgerald. She's another customs agent, along with Sandy Nunn. She would be an interesting subject to interview if you get a chance, because she left the agency after her supervisor up in Riverside told her that they didn't want to check rail cars. Now, you know what a rail car is. You know, you got your locomotive, your box cars, you know, a regular choo-choo train, right? And they've got special tank cars that look like gigantic metallic cylinders, and they typically put gas or propane.
Hazardous waste.
Yeah, they put that too. They put tar, they put waste, sometimes they put food products, orange juice, tequila, liquid sugar like corn syrup, you name it. I mean, they use all kinds of tanks. But certain types of tanks are highly pressurized and dangerous, and they have to be checked a certain way. But those are the ones that carry the cocaine. And we used to have truckloads of this stuff come through the commercial facility back in 1991. And we had a supervisor who still works for the U.S. Customs Service by the name of Arthur D. Gilbert, who I believe is probably a GS-13 by now, a supervisory level, who was trying to wave these trucks through when we had a canine officer with a canine dog barking and alerting like crazy because this truck smelt of narcotics. And this supervisor was trying to say, oh, let it go. It's probably just the driver smoked a joint or something. I don't know if you can cuss on this airwave, but I'm thinking of cuss words.
Huh? You can't swear on these airwaves.
Well, BS, BS, BS. But anyway, this supervisor was making excuses to let this stuff go through, and the dog owner threatened to call internal affairs. He should have pulled his gun on the supervisor. I would have backed him up if I was there. I was like right across the street, but I was involved in other activities. You know, the very next night, the same trucks were coming through. The second separate canine officer with his dog, who was had a good reputation, also had alerts on a truck. So they detained the truck. They detained the driver. Same supervisor tried to weasel him out of there somehow, and they held on to the truck. But somehow the supervisor got this guy out and walked him into Mexico less than 50 yards away. The truck contained a weight of over 8,500 pounds. It was supposed to be empty. Whoa. So when they unloaded it, it had 8,500 pounds of cocaine in it.
Shoot. He must have been on the take big time. I wonder what kind of a cut he would have gotten. I hope it was a pure cut, or uncut, as it were. Well, John, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show. And I want to thank you very much. Thank you very much for you know, spending some of your valuable time with us here. And you've mentioned a lot of names of other DEA agents and Mike Rupert and things like this. I would love you to do me a favor of sending me those people's emails, and if they respond, I will interview them all on this radio program one by one.
Sure.
That would be really, really nice. Thank you, man. All right, so you can go and check out John's website, customscorruption.com, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you've enjoyed this interview and the enlightenment that I have, actually. Quite surprising, really. Thank you, John, and we'll see you again sometime.